Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the program. Today, I bring you the final media roundtable hosted by former Defense Department CIO Terry Halvorsen. Halvorsen sat down with reporters before he left in early February after spending nearly 2 years as DOD's CIO. Halvorsen starts off by giving an overview of his accomplishments and challenges as CIO.
I think in the last 3 years, we've made some really good progress, but there's still a lot of work to do. When we talk about the lot of work to do, I'll ask my principal deputy who will be acting, John Zangardi, who's with us today, to comment. You know, basically, you know, I broke a lot of stuff and now he gets to clean it up. We're making good progress on some big things, JRSS, Windows 10, cloud, which I prefer to call distributed computing, the cyber scorecard, all the things that I think you know about. You've asked good questions over the years that help us think about things differently. I hope you will continue to do that with the good Dr. Zangardi. Big challenges for DOD. Those challenges are going to be, how do you keep up with the threat pace? Every time we make a gain in cybersecurity, you know, the bad guys are working to counteract that. That's not going to stop. We have to become more agile in that space, and I would argue probably in most of the spaces that we're in. That includes talking more about, I think, procurement and acquisition. They're very distinctive things. What we do in the IT business over the years has become much more about procurement, which is is buying of things that are already out there. Acquisition has a more of a development sound to it. Its process is more built around development. I think part of what we have to do in DOD is really clarify when we're doing acquisition and when we're doing procurement. And most of the stuff in IT is going to be procurement. We're making great progress, and I think what the other challenge is, and that is getting to a risk assessment mode in terms of security and moving off of what I'll call set processes. We're going to continue to push that. We're getting great cooperation from industry, and how do we push that? That has to happen. Some of the things in security have to be moved faster. We've got to be willing to put some things online without the traditional testing, because frankly, the risk of waiting outweighs any of the gains you would get from some of the longer-term testing plans. You look at what industry's doing in that space, and there's a reason they follow that model. And it's not just profit. It is, you just can't keep up with the threat if you're not being a little more agile. And I think we're going to see that in some other spaces. You've seen our vision document. I don't think that's going to change much. Our discussions with leadership, they seem aligned with it. That's leadership at the Hill, leadership in the department. I think that will continue. Certainly, there will have to be some changes to how it executes. You all know that, you know, when we started on MPE, it was not a cloud environment. We really had to call a timeout switch. I think you will see some of those things continue. One of the things I think is going to happen here that could be a game changer in terms of hardware-software integration, I do think you're maybe 24 months from seeing a commercially available cell phone form factor that will allow you to do multiple communications. It will have some radio on it. It will have wireless on it. It will have some satellite on it, and it will use all of the G's that are available from 3, 4, 5, and 6, and if there's a 7G, it'll have that too. That is not science fiction. That there's enough of that on the drawing board today that I think that will happen in the next 24 months. There are some things we didn't get done. I still consider them failures for me. I've said it before, data centers is one. We've got a new approach. It shows good promise. We've gotten some good initial support from the Hill on how we're doing that. So I think that will mature, and I think Dr. Zangardi will be able to take that from the failure column to the success column. I've talked about John as the principal deputy CIO. So you know his background includes acquisition, policy, ledge affairs, resourcing and ops. Most recently, he was the DAZN for the Navy for the command control, communications, computers and intel, and information ops and space. So he comes with a great background. Before that, he was in N26, where I worked with him a lot as the money guy, and he did a really fantastic job, and I know that he will bring those skills up here. I think knowing the acquisition system and knowing money will be two skills that will be most important as he moves forward. Because I think we're poised now to change some things. Now you've got to figure out the money and acquisition mechanics to make those happen.
Terry, thanks. Obviously, congratulations. Let me start, I guess, with some of the successes. And you mentioned great progress around several different areas, Windows 10, cloud, GRSS. Of those initiatives that you've really pushed forward over the last 3 years, which is furthest along in your eyes and which has the greatest potential in the long term?
So I'm going to cheat, Jason. I'm going to answer what I want to answer, not exactly the question, because I don't think you can separate them. So GRSS is moving very well, and that's a foundation. But if you didn't couple that with Windows 10, you wouldn't gain the whole vision. So GRSS simplifies the network structure. It makes us easier to see what's going on. And you cannot control, manage, secure, pick all the words you want if you can't see it. That will enable that. It's a big step forward. The other thing that made that a big step, JRSS, and I want to keep getting this out, is commercial equipment. It's the first time we have done all this with completely off-the-shelf equipment. And that's a big culture change that I think will sustain. Windows 10 is the foundation that lets us move to the cloud or distributed compute. So if you don't get Windows 10, people will say, well, other people have done it without moving to a single operating system. And I would ask you to go read how that went and how long it took them. It's really hard. And if you're talking about the complexity of the DoD, which most people in industry would agree with this, that it is the most complex enterprise, IT, network, whatever words you want to use, structure in the world, going to that single operating system, and I know people can say, well, you're never going to get to a single operating system. I get that. We'll be 90% Windows 10, and we'll have 10% that'll be different. That makes sense for what we do, but the bulk of DoD, the big bulk, will be on Windows 10. That lets us start moving at the speed that industry can move. One of the reasons that industry and other can generally do things faster is they're generally more homogenous than we are. That's a big win. It lets us do, you know, more complete and automated patching. It lets us take advantage of a whole lot more of commercial apps, because I think the other thing Windows 10 and that the cloud are going to empower us to do is absolutely move further into the commercial space. One of the things that we've been spending a lot of time on in the last 2 weeks is the movement from DoD to the new Cerner electronic medical record. That's not just about the electronic medical record. I almost wish we had broadened the name of that. It's about really changing the culture. We're going to move into a commercial medical space. We are, in fact, making the commercial industry better in security by the work they're doing with us. Will improve the ability for medical data for certainly people in the DoD, but frankly for other people to have their records move in a more secure way. All that, I think, is just wins, and it's all based on those three things that you talked about. So you got to have them all. Certainly JRSS and Windows 10 are further along than the cloud, though. This week, the draft RFP on the distributed computing model was released by DISA. That represents, I want to say this carefully. People ask me, well, does of all the services agree with what's in that RFP? They do. Is everything in that RFP what every service wanted? No. One of the things that I think we did very disciplined this time is say, okay, services, what can you agree needs to be enterprise? And we had high-level leadership playing in that to say, okay, yes, I didn't get this one thing I wanted, but I also didn't have to accept something I didn't. So this is the agreed-upon set of basic services. Now, I'll also tell you the other thing we put out the draft RFP. We're trying to get smarter. I suspect industry is going to come back on that and say, listen, we can do 9 of these right now, and I'm making up the numbers, well-packaged, and we could give them to you for this price. We're going to respond to that and not just say, hey, we got to have what we got to have. We are going to try to play this so that we're taking the best of industry. Frankly, yes. And some people say, well, you're giving industry a vote in your requirements. No, I'm giving them a vote in how I roll out my requirements and how effectively I can procure, not acquire, procure those in a way that makes mission and financial sense. And that is a huge cultural change for both industry and us. And that will take some, if you were a gardener, that's going to take a lot of time in the garden to make that work. But I think we're all headed in the right direction.
We have to take a break. Today I'm bringing you the final media roundtable hosted by former Defense Department CIO Terry Halverson. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, I'm bringing you the final media roundtable hosted by former Defense Department CIO Terry Halverson. We start off with one reporter asking Halverson about the lessons learned about rolling out the Joint Information Environment, or JIE, over the past few years.
Names are really important, and I would have never used JIE again. Not rolling it out the way we did, because you don't roll out JIE. JIE is the concept. It never gets delivered, because if you said you were delivered it and you were done, you'd be wrong. I did not deliver that the right way when I started. If I could go back, that's one thing I would change. I would have stressed from the beginning it was a concept. It was our vision architecture, not something that was going to roll out. That said, we are rolling out things like JRSS, the cloud. We do need a governance structure, and I like what we've done. What we've got now is at the top of that governance structure, and I think if you ask all the services, they would tell you this is the best it's ever been. We have the military CIOs and sixes, along with the DOD CIO, DISA, Cybercom, and Cybercom and NSA to a point where they should be playing. At the senior level, participating in the decisions. We have what we call the JIE XCOM. That's made up of mostly 2-stars, senior civilians who are working the day-to-day. It's chaired by Randy Conway. Randy's here today. He is our director of enterprise. Randy has personally shaped that one. When I first got up here, I'll be very candid, I was really toying with doing away with the JIE XCOM. It was not working the way I thought it should. Randy said, give me some time. And he has crafted that. And again, you could ask the services, don't trust me, ask them what they think about the JIE XCOM today. And I think they will tell you it is it's not a quiet meeting, and it shouldn't be. It's a meeting where lots of things get discussed, but it's focused on the right decisions, and it's focused on everybody getting a voice, and in the end, making the right decisions for the department in a collaborative manner. Now, I think part of the problem is people think collaborative means everybody agrees. That's not what it means. Collaborative means we've worked to a solution. Not everybody's going to agree on it, but we've worked on a solution. Everybody's had a chance to put their input. But in the end, there is a decision tree and accountability inside the DOD. So that's how we make decisions. It's collaborative as we can, but it's not always going to be in full agreement. What I think you'd hear from the services is they feel like all of their points are heard, and in many cases we do adapt to what they say because they do know what their execution problem is. So we have a good governance structure for the cloud and distributed compute. We've started and even more expanded because that's going to be very hard. And rather than go into all of that today, what I would encourage you to do, and Randy's going to get mad at this, we'll get Randy to have his conference with all of you because I do think the cloud or distributed computing is a big enough topic, and it's enough cultural, technical change that you want to hear more about. Randy's thrilled, and you can't see him here, but he is just smiling and glad that I have just put him online to do a press conference on this. We don't call them press conferences, a media roundtable, I'm sorry.
The next reporter asked Halverson about DOD's future vision for the Joint Regional Security Stacks, or JRSS.
JRSS, which is called the Joint Regional Security Stacks, is a collection of servers and security tools that in many cases will replace our multiple firewalls, and I mean big multiples, 600, 700, 800 firewalls, that give us the ability. It's commercial technology, commercial sets of tools and technology that has been used in the commercial sector to do the exact same thing. It reduces our physical footprint of servers and firewalls. It uses state-of-the-art security technology to ingest data, information throughout all of our networks, give us a better picture of what the network looks like, and gives all of the people who need it, and that includes the services, the unit, Cybercom, a better way to see how all of that's working together what's flowing through the network in terms of both content and volume, and be able to monitor it in a way that we never could before. Now, if you need more on that, I would, again, encourage you to talk with Randy's team, because we could get very technical in that. And some points, we can't go into exact details of how we're configuring it, because that would give the bad guys an advantage. What I see next is taking and building upon that and truly moving to, at the base level of security, autonomous and AI-based security tools. Given the volume and where I see the threat moving, it will be impossible for humans by themselves to keep pace. We can, and we're very close to being able to put more autonomy into the security tools, and we will get to the point, I think, within the next 18 months where AI is becoming a key factor in augmenting the human analyst in making those decisions about what you do, when do you quarantine, what parts of your network do you change structure on. I also think that will let us get predictive, not 100%. Are we going to be able to predict every attack? No. Are we going to be better about predicting trends in threat so that we're ahead of the game? Yes. Are we ever going to get where everything is completely invulnerable? No. But what the AI will also be able to do is, once you have a attack, it will have a good AI can take the configuration of the network and, faster than humans, change that configuration if it's done right, so that you get the effect of watertight doors. It will take the damaged area of the network, isolate it fast, but keep the network as a whole producing and working and doing the missions it has to do, isolate the problem, reroute around it, and then destroy the malware or whatever else is impacting the bad stuff on the network. That's what I think the future is going to be.
Related to JRSS is the cloud, and Halvorsen answers a question about where JRSS fits in with the JIE.
JRSS certainly supports data coming in from the cloud. I mean, that's what it's designed to do. I mean, JRSS, when you say it's the cloud, is the next part of that technology data structure, and JRSS will support that. It, I don't know how to be clearer than that. It's just it will support connections to the cloud in a way that makes us lets us take better advantage and makes us more agile. What do I see next for JIE? Kind of what I talked about. I do think you'll see DoD move to a distributed compute. I think you will see that in an international way. Certainly, we are looking at the mission and partner environment with our allies. Mission partner environment will really be a cloud that you can stand up, take down, that lets allies bring their tools to it, that has a common identity standard and a common security standard inside the cloud, so you can pass and share data much more seamlessly. At the far end, that will be one of the biggest force multipliers that we've ever developed.
Another question comes around DoD's effort around data center consolidation and DoD's new strategy.
So here's what I can tell you today, because we haven't done the official briefings to the Hill yet. What we're looking at is, how do we partner with industry so that when we consolidate these data centers, the full impact of what you might see if you immediately close the data center, let's be real, you immediately go in and you consolidate data centers, there are lots of impacts to the workforce. There are lots of impacts to the surrounding communities. So what we're trying to do now is, working with industry, how do we reach the savings we want while minimizing some of the impact on surrounding communities? How do we minimize the impact on overall the security issues that we have to work through? We've got some ways we're going to try to do that. Industry's been very helpful. As soon as we finish the briefing at the Hill, we'll be very eager for you to hear what that plan is, but we do need to finish briefing them first.
Halvorsen also gives us a sense of when the briefing on Capitol Hill will happen.
I think it's going to happen within the next 4 weeks. They're anxious to get it, and we are anxious to deliver it, but obviously there are a lot of issues going on in the world today.
We have to take a break. Today I'm bringing you the final media roundtable from February that former DoD CIO Terry Halvorsen hosted. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, I'm bringing you the final media roundtable hosted by former Defense Department CIO Terry Halverson from February. We begin this segment when a reporter asks Halverson about the success of the Defense Innovation Unit Experimental, or DIUX, and about its future.
From the wins, I'll talk first about DIUX. As you know, we're really anxious to get rid of the CAT card. DIUX has been absolutely key to pulling together, working with us, the right very new startup companies out in the valley and bringing us some things that I don't think, if we didn't have an organization like DIUX, I don't think the speed with which we have seen that and the rapid way we're able to start testing those technologies would have been possible. So that's what I think a DIUX can bring you. Do I think they're important? Yes, I do. I think within DOD, and I'm just going to confine my comments to DOD, I think you will find that DIUX will continue and that philosophy, that culture will expand out of DIUX to impact other pieces. The digital services team, again, if they did nothing else but bring disruption to the system, they would be powerful. Then they are certainly doing that. They come in, they look and say, hey, if you've thought about industry, particularly in business. No secret, I have said we've got to use more industry products, more commercial services in industry. They bring that to the table. They can go in and spot work a specific problem very fast with great industry expertise. So, again, I think within DOD they're going to continue to be supported. They've worked some interesting programs. They're doing some work right now on the defense travel system, which we need to work on. And I think that will produce some really good successes. So from my mind, they need to be there, and they do more than that. But just the fact that they're in the building, they're people who have come from the valley or the high-tech area, and they challenge some of our business and process assumptions. And we need to be constantly challenged on some of that.
Halverson then talks about how DOD will ensure the security of its data and applications as it does more with commercial cloud services.
I want to get this clear. You are not going to be able to do security, and we were guilty, and I think industry was guilty too, of trying to put security in a checklist. That is not going to work. This is really complicated. So what we've got to do is change this to being a true risk assessment. Some of those we're going to be able to standardize the risk assessment process. You're not going to be able to standardize many of the answers because when you look at, you take like Cerner, one of the things we learned and they learned, their network structure was different than everybody thought. Just like when they started connecting, our network structure turned out to be different in the way you'd have to connect, different than we thought. This is going to be about industry bringing ways they do business, being very honest about what they connect, us doing the same thing, and working through a risk assessment process, not a thing that says, did you comply with the port, and I'm making up these numbers, port 47 rules, the connection criteria for, you know, non-commercial accepted performance criteria systems. I mean, that can't work. One of the things we are learning with Cerner is how to have this dialogue. So I think the model that will come out of here is how do you do a risk assessment model that involves and partners with industry? And that means give and take. So in some cases, Cerner is letting us do some censoring of the whole network. In some cases, because we're doing that, we're giving Cerner access to all of the data that they should have access to. That takes good understanding of what everybody's structures are. It takes good technical understanding, but then it takes, so people ask me, who do you do these conference calls with? Do I have the engineers on them? Yes, I do. But I also have the CEO, the CIO, in some cases the CFO, and all the equivalents from our side. Because one of the things that this is going to do is in the end game, we will have a more responsive, more effective, efficient, patient records system, which will improve medical care, that in the end will also be more secure, not just for us, but for the industry at large. This could be, I think, a way where we start learning how to both partner and work together to improve both industry and DOD in what we're both delivering to our customers. Because here's the cool thing. In this case, Cerner's customers and my customers are pretty much the same. And we really have to get that understanding at I think, a base level. I am very, very happy with the work that we're doing there. And I do think that's going to be culturally groundbreaking as we wrap that up and learn. And it won't stop. The other thing I think this group is learning with Cerner is that there's no like stop point that says, okay, we're done. This business doesn't allow itself to say you're done. We'll get good. Something will happen, and we'll have to make changes and get better. And that's just not on security. New technology will come out that will drive us to different behaviors. And the ability to have that dialogue at speed, and that's what we're doing with Cerner, and I hope we will duplicate that. I think we can. I think we're learning how to do that. Across other partners is going to be very powerful.
Another question from a reporter focuses on the use of artificial intelligence in cybersecurity.
It's an absolute real effort. And there's not, if you ask me who in the department's leading it, I would say that we are certainly leading it from the standpoint of how to get accepted, but all of the services are doing, and some of the big agencies, the ones you would expect, are doing very, very good work in this. As we are also working this internationally, so I don't want to leave that out. I mean, Dr. Zangardi and I just came back from we did the Five Eyes, and this time we had a two-day session where the first day we had the Five Eyes CIOs, but we also had the CIOs from Germany, representatives from NATO and Japan. And this is also one of the issues we talked about with them. So this is definitely real. It's more than notional. I mean, we're looking at everything from Watson to some of the stuff that I told you DIUX brought forward in the way we're looking at the CAC card replacements. AI can have a real play in that with behavior and how you can anticipate behavior, how you look at some everything from, I mean, it's crazy. The way people actually individually move the mouse becomes something that becomes very distinctive. And there's just a lot of things that AI is going to be able to do. But we're going to learn a lot of lessons there. And I suspect we will end up looking at some things. And if we don't have a couple quick failures there, that probably means we didn't cast a wide enough net. So this is very real. I mean, DARPA's involved in this. This is very real inside the department. And if you look at things that are happening in the department, and it's not just AI is not just something limited to inside the IT space. We're seeing that in lots of spaces. I mean, there's some unbelievable medical technology going on today that's augmenting. And I don't mean just the stuff with Watson was incredible, what it's doing to help the medical world. And now collating that data and actually having the machine pull together what I would call very close to thoughts on delivering is happening. So this is, I think, the next big explosion.
Terry, what comes next for you?
I'm going to go do something in the industry. I don't know what yet.
Vacation?
A little bit of time off. There are good problems to have. There's lots of opportunities in the industry, and I'll certainly let you know when I figure out where I'll be. Thanks for asking. Keep pressing hard on all this, and you know, make sure that if you don't think we're headed in the right direction, you're a big voice about telling us why we're not. Again, thank you all. As I've challenged my own staff, I challenge you all to keep bringing up and asking hard questions.
We have to take a break. Today you heard the final media roundtable hosted by former Defense Department CIO Terry Halverson in February. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. In this part of the show, we shift gears and hear from the Army to get an update on its cyber directorate. First, we hear from Brigadier General Patricia Frost, the director of the Army Cyber Directorate. And then we hear from Brigadier General J.P. McGee, the Army Cyber Command Deputy General for Operations. Both also take questions from reporters during the recent media roundtable.
I think the investment in manpower, resourcing, facilities by our Army, and I'll be biased, I don't think any other service can match. And I say that because we're seeing the benefits of what the Army invested in the last few years, and we're actually seeing that operationally in what we're able to affect today. And I talk about that because that is an Army, I say cyber enterprise. It's not just what we've done within the Army, it's our partnerships throughout the government, with industry, academia, and how we're going to take and be the lead in capabilities and operational concepts, not just for U.S. Cyber Command, but for Department of Defense. And we recognize that the threat environment has changed. So let's just, I just want to capture real quickly where we've been. So 2010, we declared it a domain. Army Cyber was established. Since 2010, we created the cyber branch. And that is the first branch we have created since the stand-up of Special Operations Forces. So presently today, in that 17 series, that's a career management field for officers, warrant officers, and enlisted, we have over 1,200 17 series soldiers and officers that comprise part of our cyber mission force. I saw our cyber mission force is made up of other MOSs, but just in 17 alone, what we call kind of that on-net warrior, we have over 1,200 to date that have been trained or in the process of getting to that fully trained certification level. We also established the Cyber Center of Excellence at Fort Gordon. That was established in 2014. That has the two schools underneath it, Cyber and Signal, but they're also the proponent now for electronic warfare. So that used to sit over at Fort Sill under the Fire Center. We have now pulled that into Cyber Center of Excellence, which is really critical based on Army Cyber's overall mission for cyber, electronic warfare, and information operations integration.
When did that move of EW happen?
Just this year, 2016, right, is when that proponency moved. I mean, I think I made the announcement at the Association of Old Crows in December that eventually the electronic warfare MOS 29 series by FY18 will move into a 17 series foundation that doesn't take away their electronic warfare capability, but they will get trained in a base level of cyber and intelligence and signal, but then also bring the electronic warfare capability. So that's pretty exciting that we're integrating that in our institutional training. So they will have a level of institutional training. We also established the Army Cyber Institute at West Point, New York. That was also done in 2014. And they really lead our integration of partnership with industry and academia. And that's a Colonel Randy Hall, if you've ever gotten the chance to go up and meet with Andy Hall. We take visitors all the time. We started our what was called Cyber Support to Core and Below initiative. That we were given that mission by then Chief of Staff of the Army General Odierno back in May of 2014. We now call that our SEMA support to Core and Below. And we'll talk about it a little bit further because we invite all of you to come out to the next rotation out at the National Training Center, which will kick off April 22nd, I think, and will last for about 3 weeks. So we will have a media day. Absolutely welcome you to come out and see what we're doing at the Tactical Edge for cyber, EW, and IO. So also in the build, where are we? 41 teams is what the Army build requirement is of the Cyber Mission Force for U.S. Cyber Command. We have 30 teams that are at an initial operating, or at a full operational capability, FOC, and 11 teams that are in an IOC status. We will meet the FY18 requirement to have all the teams at FOC when we probably will be a little bit early on delivery of having all the teams through not only the institutional training, what I call individual soldier officer training, and then the collective training that means they're actually able to operate as an integrated team. So the requirement was that by the end of 2000, we believe it will happen by the end of 2017, which will be early for the FY2018 goal. I think many of you are tracking that the Army National Guard and the Reserve component are also building cyber protection teams. That is one of the type of teams that make up the Cyber Mission Force. They are building 21 teams, 11 in the National Guard and 10 in the Army Reserve. So we've also had just recently, that just came out in January, there was from Department of Defense, when we look at the civilian manpower force that makes up part of our cyber enterprise, is we have been given a pilot program by DoD to look at civilian direct commissioning. So much like we do with lawyers and doctors and other career fields for the Army, DoD has now asked us to do a pilot program by service that we can conduct looking at skill sets that we could bring on direct commissioning into the cyber career field. So again, that's just hot off the press. Our HQDA G1 has that lead. General McGee will talk about that, how that can get incorporated into the talent management program that has just stood up under his watch. And the other thing that just came out in January of 2017 within the Army is the Civilian Cyberspace Effects Career Program for our Army government civilians. So much like we have an intelligence career program and we have an IT career program, we will now have a cyberspace effects career program, which will help us give them probably a better chart of professional development for our civilians. And we'll actually allow them to move probably within the cyber enterprise. And we'll see if the other services do something similar. So, but instead of waiting, the Army saw the need that we really needed. So our civilians asked for it. So when I was down in General McGee's job, when we would have our town halls, the civilians all said, okay, you created this 17 career management field for the soldiers and officers, what about us? And that was just a huge demand signal that the civilians were looking for that type of professional development career path so they could proceed as they support this enterprise. So with that, that's just kind of captures where we are. I think you all are tracking. We had the groundbreaking in 2016 for the headquarters, which right now sits at Fort Belvoir, that will move down to Fort Gordon. So you will have headquarters Army Cyber, you will have the Joint Force Headquarters Cyber that Army Cyber supports, which is part of Army Cyber. You will have the Cyber Center of Excellence schoolhouse there. You have National Security Agency, Georgia sits at Fort Gordon as well. So large footprint, huge investment that the Army will have as we start that move down south. So with that, I'll turn it over to JP.
Okay, so again, I'm JP McGee. I'm the Deputy Commanding General for Operations for Army Cyber. And I come at this maybe with a different background from some who are in this field. You know, the cyber field is largely filled with signal intelligence officers and a fair chunk of maneuver. But I have been an infantry officer previously, commanded an infantry brigade, came from being a deputy commanding general of a division, and do not come from a technical background. As a matter of fact, I'm sort of decidedly not a tech person. So much of the stuff that I'm going to talk to you about is stuff that I've learned in the last 6 months or 7 months since I arrived in the job in July. And I'll try to frame this as simply as possible, because I think cyber is one of these fields that a lot of people, I think we all sort of think we understand it, but we've decided that we wanted to make sure that a couple things about what Army Cyber is doing is sort of clarified and put out in very simple speak. So one of the biggest responsibilities we have within Army Cyber Command is the running of the Army's portion of what's known as the Department of Defense Information Network, the DODIN. Okay, so you think about the whole systems of communications devices and everything that's connected from the tactical level up to the strategic. And increasingly, we have started to look at that as a weapons platform. That is central to the way the Army conducts operations and the support that it provides to the Joint Force for them to be able to conduct that. And we are pressing hard for the Army to start looking at the network as a weapons platform that needs to be prioritized by commanders and not relegated to staff sections to deal with. And decisions made about the network are central to our ability to operate in the future, where we think what we've had in the past will change, and that this will become a contested environment. And our ability to operate communications network and execute what we call mission command, what used to be called C2, is going to be contested. And commanders need to have ownership of how we run and operate networks going forward in anticipation of what future fights might be. So the other piece that is really important is that the U.S. Army has cyber soldiers who are in the fight today. I mean, today we have Army soldiers who are delivering effects against our adversaries in ISIS or ISIL in northern Iraq and Syria, and that is happening every single day. So we have Army soldiers that are in the fight and they're engaged, and as Patricia mentioned, as we build these teams, we are largely building them, getting an initial operating capability, and then putting them right into the fight in contact in cyberspace. And that looks different based on different missions. But the employment of these forces, you know, as soon as we are creating them, they are being put into operational use.
Defensively and as well.
Defensive and
so
offensive.
As soon as a defense team hits IOC, they are actually on net doing defensive actions.
That's exactly right. And that sort of hits the next point, which is within this, while a lot of attention is paid to the offensive capabilities because it is unique and somewhat compelling and interesting, actually the most important thing that we're doing is defending our network. And so my boss, Lieutenant General Paul Nakasone, his number one priority is the defense of the Army's portion of the Department of Defense Information Network. That's the central piece, the most important piece of what we're trying to do, because it is just central, as I discussed, to everything that the Army does when we conduct operations. We all know that cyberspace threats and challenges are continuing to increase, and we're trying to keep pace with our defensive measures as we're going along. What has been interesting to me, coming from a operational maneuver background, is there are a bunch of sort of perceptions that I had, but it's interesting to me to watch cyberspace operations being conducted against an adversary. And the fact of the matter is, they look very similar to ground combat operations that I've been in charge of in Iraq or in Afghanistan. And all the elements of Army leadership that are necessary to succeed in the ground domain are in the land domain are necessary to succeed in the cyber. So leadership plays a critical part of all of this. Intelligence and support provides a critical, you know, component. Certainly we have operators with high-end technical skills, which are part of this, but they're not lone wolf operators. They're actually part of a well-disciplined, well-trained team that operates within, you know, the rules of engagement and operates within a commander's intent. And the same struggles that they have are very, very analogous to what happens when you're deployed overseas to places like Iraq and Afghanistan. It's just that contact is happening in cyberspace. And to me, that was really eye-opening. We all know that partnership with the and working closely private corporations is key, as they're great innovators and developers within this space. One of the pieces that we're working is the Hack the Army piece, where we've invited them to discover vulnerabilities in select portions of our network, and that's something that we've just started and I think is already starting to deliver, you know, some initial promising results. And then the final piece, and maybe it goes back a little bit to my original, to the point about how this looks like, you know, ground operations in many ways, is the critical role that people play in this. I think many people believe that technology is the key driver of this, and certainly technology is critical to success. But I would argue that the most critical component is the people that we have who are operating the technology, the teams that we built, and how effectively they operate. And to me, that has been really probably one of the more eye-opening pieces as well. And again, how we manage the people, how we do that has become a part of my responsibilities, and I'd be more than willing to talk to you about it. But I'll tell you that I think the Army is trying very hard to develop a agile enough human resources policies and plans to be able to support the unique needs to make us competitive in cyberspace with the right people, you know, staying in the Army and continuing these missions, which they generally find tremendously rewarding.
That's all the time we have for today. You just heard from Brigadier General Patricia Frost, the Director of the Army Cyber Directorate, and from Brigadier General J.P. McGee, the Army Cyber Command Deputy General for Operations. Earlier, I brought you the final media roundtable hosted by former Defense Department CIO Terry Halverson. I'm Jason Miller, and thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.